I'm Lisa Mullins, and this is The World. On September 11, 2001, Julia Kayyem was on a train to New York. She was with her infant daughter. Kayyem was a national security expert at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government. We spoke with Kayyem that day, just hours after hijacked planes flew into the World Trade Center, the Pentagon, and a field in rural Pennsylvania. We got in touch with Julia Kayyem again to get her thoughts 10 years after the attacks. Kayyem spent the last 2 years as an assistant secretary of intergovernmental affairs at the Department of Homeland Security. Right now, she's a national security and foreign policy columnist for the Boston Globe. We asked her first to describe her experiences on 9/11.
I had a five-week-old daughter, and we had taken the train into New York, and the first attack had occurred before the train left Boston. And over the course of this, you know, 2.5 hours, people are getting phone calls. They're looking online to see what's going on. We arrive in New Haven once the second plane went into the World Trade Center. And, you know, no one knew what to do at this time. And I just thought, this is ridiculous. This train doesn't seem to be stopping. It's going into New York City. And it was, I have to admit, it was probably the only time ever, even 10 years later, that I stood up. Here I was with my daughter and said, look, you know, I kind of know this world. I had been in national security and counterterrorism. It is a bad idea to go into the city. Everyone should get off.
You stood up in the car, the train car that you were in, and
said that. Yes, and just said, everyone get off. I talked to the conductor. I mean, it was the weirdest thing because the Amtrak train had CNN, but it was taped. So everyone knows this horrible thing is happening, but you're watching some tape segment from whatever else.
That had nothing to do with what was going on.
And so people started to get off. By then, Amtrak had decided, and obviously New York City had decided, no trains were going to come in. And at some stage, I was able to reach my husband and said, you just got to get in the car and pick me up. And then just started getting a lot of media calls about sort of what was going on. People knew I was coming to New York City and thought I was on a plane. So there's also that personal aspect of it. So my mother, you know, a whole bunch of people were sort of worried as well, sort of about me physically. Sort of, was I on one of the planes? I had decided the day before to take the train instead.
So that's the point where we talked to you. I have to say, at the time, you were incredibly composed,
yes,
especially given what you're saying right now,
yeah,
about having your newborn with you and knowing at least as much as you did know about what was going on at the time.
Right. I mean, it was very difficult. I reheard our tape. And, I mean, two things struck me re-listening to it. One is I sound very academic and very governmental. And the other was my sort of unwillingness to say, because I simply didn't have access to information, although I certainly knew that it was Al-Qaeda.
At that point, you knew?
Almost anyone who had been in the field would know. No one could have thought this through quite so well and would have the desire to do it than Al-Qaeda. And I think I was even reluctant in that tape to say it was definitively, only because I had no access to information. It was all rumors. And I mean, and the final thing I remember and willing to admit 10 years later, you know, I was trying to sort of play this role as the objective expert. But, you know, I remember hanging up the phone with you and just, you know, to be honest, bursting out crying. It was the combination of being stranded, being with my newborn. I have family in New York City. And just, you know, this day that even if it didn't impact you personally, it impacted, to be honest, it impacted everyone personally, even counterterrorism experts. And eventually my husband picked me up and we drove back. And that was eerie too, because as you remember, the streets were empty. Coming back from New Haven to Boston, it was like a ghost town.
I wonder, in the 10 years since, what's changed for you professionally and personally? Mm-hmm. What do you feel as though you know now that you didn't know at the time about terrorism, even though you're a counterterrorism expert? I mean, what was it like to work in counterterrorism?
Then it was all foreign. So my professional trajectory has changed as well, because then it was, what are the rules about counterterrorism, intelligence gathering counterterrorism in terms of the capture of terrorists abroad. And that just completely changed because of September 11th. And what sort of really grew after September 11th was this notion of homeland security and domestic preparedness. I had been in that field as well, and I found it intellectually very interesting. I mean, I think the notion of how do you counter a new threat and a terribly violent threat in a democratic society, that piece of counterterrorism, which includes, of course, military efforts, intelligence, diplomacy, all sorts of things, but that piece about sort of how do you retain American democratic norms while still fighting a threat is, you know, was the debate of the Bush administration, and certainly one that I engaged in. And then ultimately, when the Obama transition began, I was asked to help with the transition and then join government. I was sort of shocked re-entering federal government, just how the focus, it wasn't just the fact I was in Homeland Security, but so much of what government did was national security related, just simply because of the wars.
You know, we don't hear the question asked that was asked so often in, say, the 4, 5, 6 years after 9/11, especially during elections, and that is, are we safer today than we were then? The temptation is to say, are we? But also, why isn't it asked
more often?
More often, and probably because we haven't been attacked in that way.
Right. Yet. I always hated that question because I never knew how to answer it, because it's like, you know, safer from what? I mean, obviously, when you ask that question, it's Al-Qaeda and bin Laden.
It's taking more precautions.
Yes. And I think that's right. And I think there's a tremendous apparatus that's doing that. Is it foolproof? No. And actually, to be honest, listening, you asked me what has changed in 10 years, listening to our interview 10 years ago, I still believe that we'll never be perfectly safe. And I think the American public has got to be tolerant and, in fact, maybe even applauded at times, because we would not, as individuals, tolerate a society that was perfectly safe. Because do you know what it means? It means we have no mass transit, right? It means the T is closed, the New York subway is closed, whatever you want to call it. And so I still believe that. And I think we are safer. I think people are more vigilant. I think people are much more accepting of their responsibilities. We've seen a number of both terrorism and also natural disasters. And I think we've learned from Hurricane Katrina, which I sort of view as another arc in this 10-year period, that a nation too focused on terrorism may forget the fundamentals of other things. Personally, that arc sort of over the 10-year period, I've had two more children, and they all have different access points in terms of mom's career. So my daughter is acutely aware of September 11th. My son, the middle one, of Hurricane Katrina, and then the youngest, who's now 5, and I essentially didn't live with my family last summer because of the spill, you know, is very aware that oil spills.
How do you talk to them, especially the oldest one who was born, you know, 6 weeks before 9/11? How do you talk to them?
I'm pretty honest about what it is that's out there and what their mom does, and that the world is filled with bad things, but they're very lucky, and that's what they know. I mean, that we live in a relatively peaceful society, and they have means and a house and support, and that's the way we talk to them about it. And it's funny, because when you talk about this trajectory after years in government and in this field, this is sort of a pivot year for me personally, because I think in some ways the 10 years I'm a little bit done as well, and sort of thinking about pivoting this year as well, as we all sort of think 10 years later, sort of what's in store next. And so, you know, I resigned from the Obama administration and came back here just about the anniversary time.
Juliet Kai, I'm happy to have you back here after speaking to you on that day, September 11th, 2001.
Thank you.
Juliet Kaim is now a columnist for the Boston Globe and teaches at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government.